It's business time, baby.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
My client,
Mama Monster,
conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Fat delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
This is your Sound Off Extra review for WWE WrestleMania 34 here on Monday, April 9th, 2018. I am the Sala Monster. We were having some technical difficulties trying to get a round table together with the usual crew, and so I am actually recording this, believe it or not. I brought along with me, I have a Shure MV Motive 88 microphone that literally plugs right into my iPhone. It's the same microphone I use when I do any on-site interviews. I've used these to do interviews from the WWE 2K video game events. So thankfully I had this in my proverbial back pocket, so I'm able to do a WrestleMania review before I get home. The show was last night, and the Twitter poll results so far have been overwhelming. We've already had over 6,500 votes, which is our biggest response ever, and it hasn't even been a full 12 hours yet. 63% thumbs up, 37% thumbs down, and you can count me among the 63%. I thought this was the best top-to-bottom WrestleMania since WrestleMania 31, which was the show where Seth Rollins had his big Money in the Bank cash-in at the end of the show. I can't rank this one higher than that show, but it was better than WrestleMania 32, and I thought it was better than last year's show in Orlando. And it sets up a very interesting Raw show tonight, which is just a few hours away as I am recording this, particularly when it comes to the Universal Championship, which still, a year and counting, belongs to The Beast, Brock Lesnar, at least for a few more hours. We'll get into all the WrestleMania stuff here in just a second. I might try to squeeze in some very quick thoughts on a fantastic NXT TakeOver show at the very end before we wrap up. I just want to mention it was a very long night last night. I want to thank everybody who came out to our meetup at Pat O'Brien's yesterday. There were a couple of different events going on, so there were a ton of people there at 11 a.m., from 11 a.m. onward. But I want to thank everybody who came out from our crew. We had a great turnout. I met a lot of great people yesterday. I want to thank Savannah, if she's listening, Savannah, for the very nice card that she gave to me. And my fellow horsemen, Noah Mark, Brian Blade, Webmaster Mike, our buddy Jared, the whole crew who got me a very nice custom WrestleMania 34 jersey with the name Sala Monster on the back of it, which they didn't have to do. But that was a very kind gesture on their part. And I was told, no, I did not see this, and I'm told this is not a joke, but I am told that Linda McMahon even stopped by Pat O'Brien's during our meetup yesterday. I'm sure it wasn't for the meetup, obviously, but Linda McMahon herself, not an imposter. There were a lot of imposters running around, Imposter Kane, Imposter Mankind, because there was a costume contest going on as well. The Linda McMahon, the head of the Small Business Administration here in the U.S., for whatever reason, hurricane in hand, I'm told, made a pass through Pat O'Brien's during our meetup, and I just missed her because I was on the other side. So that would have been very interesting, actually, to be able to get a chance meeting with Linda McMahon. But thank you again to everybody who came out. Now back to WrestleMania. My overall thoughts on this show, as I mentioned, I consider myself part of the 63% of you who would give this show a thumbs up. I was not enthralled with everything that they did, but when the show is over, you know, long as it was, and it was a very long show, I was overall pretty happy with what they gave us. And I thought that there were, you know, a lot of, looking back on the show, I thought there were some really good matches and you know, memorable moments, a lot of questionable finishes, which I'll get into as we go along here, but I was not angry, was not mad coming out of this WrestleMania. I thought there was a lot of good stuff on this show. And like I said, the best Mania show in the last couple of years, certainly. Let's start from the beginning here. The men's Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Really a nothing match in a lot of ways. This was just the match for all the people that had nothing better to do. Bray Wyatt did make his big return here at the end. It did come down to Woken Matt Hardy and Baron Corbin and Wyatt, who did not come out as part of the Battle Royal. The lights went out, they came back on, and he was in the ring. Now, all of us in the stadium, or in the dome, I should say, the Superdome, where, by the way, they announced a sellout of 78,000 was the number they gave in the official press release they put out. They claimed it was a sellout. It was not a sellout. They can claim it was a sellout all they want to. It was not a sellout. But still a big crowd. Very big crowd. Very packed in the Superdome, but not sold out. So, as I said, it came down to Hardy and Corbin. Lights go out, come back on. There's Bray Wyatt in the ring. And for all this talk about how he's, you know, going to get a makeover and he's going to look different and he fell into the lake of reincarnation, he has been reincarnated as a babyface because he looks the same. There was really nothing about him that was any different other than the fact that he helped Matt win the Battle Royal. And everybody was very confused because we thought it came down to him and Bray. And people didn't realize that he wasn't officially in the Battle Royal. It was a while before they actually rang the bell and played Matt's music. So they kind of botched that up a little bit. There was some confusion. But Matt Hardy gets himself a big win at WrestleMania on the kickoff show. And he and Wyatt celebrated at the end. I love how Matt went over to the Andre statue and was talking to it and interacting with it. Apparently now he claims that he's getting messages and communicating with it. So this could be very entertaining. Bray needed not just a makeover, Bray needed a babyface turn in the worst way. I've been saying this for months now. I think the only thing left to do with him that could really give him a shot at salvaging that character and that gimmick is going babyface, because I do think there's a big segment of people who would like to cheer for the guy. And now that he is, I guess he also has become Woken, Woken Wyatt, I guess maybe they'll call him. And could be the beginnings of a faction. Who knows? I mean, we know Jeff is on his way back soon. I don't know if Jeff may do his own thing. I don't know if they'll have Brother Nero be part of that little group. But for Bray Wyatt, I think this is the best possible thing that they could, you know, could do with him at the moment. And it was a cool win for Matt. We had the finals of the Cruiserweight Championship Tournament, Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali on the kickoff show. They had a good match. I was watching most of it on a television screen because I was waiting in line to get food. I did not expect the lines to be that long. Can I just say this? And anybody who went to WrestleMania this year or 4 years ago can vouch for this. As nice as the Superdome looks on the exterior, you know, on the outside, it looks kind of cool. I don't know, just kind of the shape of the building. When you get inside, I'm not going to call it a dump because that's not accurate. The layout and the configuration of this building is god-awful. Absolutely god-awful. I mean, the concourse and everything, it's so narrow, you can't even move around. People were pushing and shoving each other. The lines, it just absolute insanity. So not a big fan of the Superdome. So I tried to see as much of the match as I could from my position in line, and then I came back in time for the finish, which was Cedric Alexander beating Mustafa Ali. No big surprise there. Cedric, it seemed like this whole tournament was sort of designed to build to a big win for him. Ali got his WrestleMania moment. He had a good performance. But in the end, it was Alexander who used the lumbar check to beat him. And he is now the new Cruiserweight champion. We had the first ever women's WrestleMania Battle Royal, which they made a very big deal out of. Lillian Garcia came out to make the announcements for it. And they had a bunch of NXT women in the Battle Royal. It was kind of weird the people they chose to use. Maybe they just wanted to represent different populations. They had Kavita Devi, for example, representing India. And she's not very good. But she was in there. Tainara Conti was in there. And I know she's from, I want to say Brazil. I could be wrong. I think it's some South American country. I believe it might be Brazil. But anyway, she was in there. Peyton Royce was in there, but no Billie Kay. That was weird. Unless she's heard, I haven't heard that, but you had one half of the Iconic duo was in there, as well as Dakota Kai, Bianca Belair, and Kairi Sane. So that was your NXT representation here in this Women's Battle Royal. No Ember Moon. I know there were a lot of people, myself included, who figured she was main roster bound after her loss to Shayna Baszler, and she still might be. Just because she wasn't in the Battle Royal doesn't mean she won't be on Raw tonight. Or SmackDown tomorrow night. In fact, I expect her to be, but she was not in this match. As far as the match itself, came down to, well, what we thought was Sasha Banks and Bayley. And Bayley dumped Sasha out. This great spot. People cheered. They went crazy. We all thought Bayley won. And Sasha was on the outside, probably in tears. I don't know. It was hard to tell. But knowing her, she probably was. And everybody realized, wait a minute, Naomi is still in this match. Naomi, now I didn't see how Naomi had got dumped out of the ring from where I was sitting. I didn't know. I just completely forgot about her. I assumed that she had been eliminated. People were very upset when Becky Lynch was eliminated. And, you know, in the end, it was Naomi getting the win because Bayley had no idea she was still in the match. And Bayley got dumped by Naomi. So Naomi gets herself a big WrestleMania win. And happy for her. It's a great moment for her. If it were me, I would go with the other woman who is sort of directionless right now on the SmackDown roster and has really not a whole lot going on, and I think is also criminally underused, and that is Becky Lynch. So if it were me, I would have given Becky the big win. Maybe they just didn't want to have one of their fellow Horsemen members do the deed, but a big win for Naomi that I guess just serves to further the story that they're telling between Sasha and Bayley. Building to the eventual match between the two, which I have to assume is being saved for the Backlash pay-per-view in early May. But really beyond that main story, you know, I'm kind of glossing over them, but there really isn't a whole lot else to talk about. You had two battle royals where there wasn't a whole lot going on, and you had the Cruiserweight Championship match. And that built to the opener, which was the triple threat match for the Intercontinental Championship, Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, and The Miz. In one of the matches, I would say one of the matches that I was more, you know, looking forward to here on the show, Seth Rollins had a, what I was told, I'm not a Game of Thrones fan. I don't hate the show. I've just never watched it. I've never seen a single full start to finish episode of Game of Thrones. But I had everybody telling me it's a White Walker's entrance. It's a White Walker entrance. And I guess there's a character on the show that has these blue eyes or blue contact lenses or what have you. It looked badass. I mean, the set looked just fantastic. Not as nice as last year's set in Orlando, but I thought the WrestleMania stage and set looked really cool. And so in the background, you kind of see a set of eyes that have those blue, like those really sharp blue eyes. And I didn't realize until after watching part of the network feed after the fact that Rollins had those blue contact lenses in. So that was really cool. I actually thought that the Rollins entrance and the Nakamura entrance were probably the coolest ones in the entire show. And Charlotte was good too, but this one was really cool, and the Nakamura rock concert violin combo was also very well done. This was an excellent opener. This really was. This was an excellent opening match. I thought everybody played their role perfectly. Miz was in there bumping around, and I really enjoyed this match. In the end, Seth Rollins got the win. Seth Rollins is your new Intercontinental Champion. It's weird because my pick for this match was Balor, and my backup pick, if I were wrong, was going to be Miz. So they actually went with the guy who I thought was not going to win this match. And looking up and down the card, I can honestly say that I was way off on my WrestleMania predictions this year. Some years I do great. This was not one of those years. I got not every match wrong. But if you tally up the number I got right against the number I got wrong, I was way off. And I think that's one of the things I actually enjoyed about the show this year is that I enjoyed the fact that I was off on a lot of my predictions. Again, I'm not thrilled with some of these finishes, but you know, like the main event or even a match like this, when things turn out to not be so predictable, more so when they make sense, not just to do it for the sake of doing it. But this was a case where there were a lot of finishes that shocked me. And some maybe that weren't so shocking, but that I got wrong, and I actually enjoyed that. I'm happy that I got a lot of these outcomes wrong, because when they sort of go in a different direction like that, you know, that could be kind of a cool thing. So this was one of those things that I did not see coming. I didn't think they were going to put the belt on Rollins. I thought they were going to prime him up for a WWE Championship run, not run, but you know, to challenge for a top title on either brand. Maybe they would be drafted over to SmackDown. Which he still could be. You know, that IC title could very well end up back on SmackDown at some point. But this was a really good match. It really was. A lot of back and forth here with, you know, each guy hitting their move. Lots of kickouts, near falls, all the things you would expect here in this match. But in the end, it was the curb stomp. It was the curb stomp that got the win for Seth Rollins. We had Charlotte Flair and Asuka for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Asuka putting her extended streak on the line here, never pinned or made to submit in a WWE or NXT ring for that matter. Something like 900 days, right? This huge streak that she's had going. Charlotte, though, is clearly positioned as the queen bee of the WWE women's roster. It's not Sasha. It's not Bayley. It's not Ronda, although in due time it may well be Rousey. But it's Charlotte. They're positioning Charlotte to be the greatest female performer in the history of the business. And she's well on her way. I would hesitate to say that she's there yet. But you could certainly make the argument. I mean, if you wanted to have that debate, is Charlotte the best ever? Sasha's made comments like that before. And I don't know half the time if it's in kayfabe or if she honestly believes that. And people laugh at her, and rightfully so. Because as good as someone like Sasha Banks is, I don't know that I would be comfortable sitting here saying, oh, she's the greatest of all time. She's not. But I hesitate to do that with Charlotte as well, because she's still only a few years into this and has a long career yet ahead of her. And I think it's a little too early to be calling somebody the very best ever. As a match, I thought it was a good match. I thought that it was maybe a little on the shorter side, but what they did, I thought was, you know, very well done. And I thought it was a good back and forth. And, you know, we actually saw Charlotte bust out a top rope Spanish fly. I thought she was going to kill herself. A top rope Spanish fly in this match. In the end, it was a submission win for Charlotte. It wasn't even a pinfall. She got Asuka to tap out in the figure eight. After the match, Asuka picks up the microphone, says to Charlotte, Charlotte was ready for Asuka. And they hug, and it's this great feel-good moment. I would not have ended the streak. I feel like a broken record here in this very building, right? This building was not made for streaks. We had a huge streak end 4 years ago. We had another one end last night. Asuka is no longer undefeated. It does open up, you know, some other interesting possibilities now that you've gotten that monkey off her back, so to speak, and she's no longer, you know, you no longer have to worry like everybody, you know, is sort of being fed to her because we can't end the streak, we can't beat her. You know, there is a benefit, I guess, to sort of being free of that. But they had something with this streak. This streak had lasted a very long time. I kind of wish they would have kept it going longer. I'm not even saying another year. I do think they could have, you know, eventually built to a Rousey-Asuka match if they wanted to have Rousey be the first one to end the streak. So I'm not angry about this. I'm not upset. I think they made a mistake. I would have kept it going longer. But on the other hand, if Charlotte is, you know, as they say, their pick for the greatest of all time, and they're sort of building everything around her, it's WrestleMania, right? So you also have your biggest show of the year in front of your biggest audience of the year. If there was a time to do it, if they were hell-bent on ending the streak, then this was as good a time as any. And what that tells me is that the match here is not going to be Asuka and Rousey. The match is going to be Charlotte and Rousey. And I am in agreement with many other people who I think share this opinion that there is a very good possibility that the main event of WrestleMania 35 in MetLife Stadium next year will be the first ever women's main event in WrestleMania history, and it will be for the championship. It will be Ronda Rousey challenging Charlotte. I think that's your WrestleMania 35 main event. It's not necessarily the match that I would have. It's too early for me to say what the main event should be for next year's WrestleMania. I'm not, you know, against the women getting the main event spot. I've talked at length about this before. But I think that that's something that they're probably building to. I think that right now is probably the favorite as far as what next year's WrestleMania main event is going to be. And that could be Rousey's crowning moment. It could be Rousey winning her first championship and beating Charlotte. I'm going to talk about Rousey in a second because she turned a lot of heads and impressed a lot of people last night, myself included. But I mean, as a match here, I thought the match was very good. Again, I'm not a fan of ending Asuka's streak, but if you were going to end it, Charlotte's as good a person as any. You know, I was not enamored with these theories people were floating that Carmella would sort of, she would cash in and she would be the one just to get massive heat. Carmella would like on one of these slip on a banana peel finishes, cash in her money in the bank on Asuka and beat her. I think that would have been far worse. Now, as Charlotte was exiting, John Cena was sitting in the crowd. John Cena was at WrestleMania as promised as a fan. And a referee came running out from the back to inform him of something. I presume that The Undertaker was here or on his way. And Cena sprinted to the back like somebody had just told him that his car was being towed. And he ran to the back. He blew right past Charlotte. You know, it was kind of a weird time to do that, but off went John Cena. We'll get back to him. Randy Orton, Rusev, and Jinder Mahal, and Bobby Roode for the United States Championship Fatal 4-Way match. Crowd loved Aiden English coming out and rapping Rusev down to the ring. Rusev Day has been the most over chant of the entire weekend. 4 years ago, it was the Yes chant. This time it was Rusev Day. All weekend, everywhere I went, restaurants, Bourbon Street, Rusev Day, Rusev Day. And so what do they do here? Well, Jinder Mahal is your new United States champion. And who did he beat? Who did Jinder Mahal pin to win that U.S. title? Why, of course, he pinned Rusev. And so Jinder is now the champion. And playing devil's advocate here, if I am to believe, and I am not convinced of this, but if I am to believe that WWE realizes what they have with Rusev, that he's hot right now. He may not be this hot. The Rusev Day thing may die a death and not really be a thing anymore in 6 months. But let's capitalize on this. This guy's popular right now. Let's take advantage of this. I'd like to think that this was their way of, A, getting a massive heat on Jinder for pinning the one guy people actually liked in this, like really, really super liked in this match. And also is a way to kickstart a program between Rusev and him and officially turn Rusev babyface in the process and have Rusev challenge Jinder in a program for the United States Championship and not just revert back to matches with, you know, I can't take any more matches with Jinder and Orton. We got to get away from that. And frankly, even Jinder and Bobby Roode is not really a match or a program that excites me. But if they use this as an opportunity to get Rusev hot and you know, put him in a championship mid-card feud, then it all makes sense. But I also look at this and say to myself, is it possible that WWE is just sort of trolling people by pinning the one guy in this match who was the most popular going in? And the answer is a resounding yes, they can, and they would. So somebody did tweet me and say there was also the possibility that those reports, those rumors from a few weeks ago that Rusev had either expressed an interest in getting a release or asked for a release, obviously was not granted one. Perhaps he is going to be granted one. Maybe there's some truth to that. Maybe he wants out. And if they know he wants out, then yes, it would be foolish to put a championship on him. And so that would make sense too. I don't get the sense that that's the case. I don't think he's going anywhere. So it's either them just trolling people, or hopefully it sets Rusev up for bigger things. As a match, I didn't see a whole lot of this. This was the match. I needed a match for a piss break, and this was the match I picked. I waited until Rusev came out. I did wait until he made his entrance. As soon as he made his entrance, I headed for the bathroom. And if this was any other stadium or arena, I would have been back at my seat within 10 minutes. But this was the Superdome. And so even the men's bathroom line snaked around the concourse, and I made it back just in time for the finish to see the Colossus do Rusev in. So there you go. I don't really have a whole lot more to say about this match. But I do have a lot to say about this next match. Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. This match was an absolute spectacle. This was a spectacle from start to finish, and I can honestly say that for the last, 10 to 12 minutes probably of this match, which went well over 20. This was a long match. For more than half the match, the crowd in my section, in the surrounding sections, pretty much throughout the Superdome, everybody was on their feet. Nobody sat down. And once this match really kicked in, nobody sat down. And so say what you want to, if you were not a fan of this tag match going in, if you're not a fan of Triple H and Stephanie. I did say, you know, from the beginning, if I had my say of what I would do with Ronda, I did think the mixed tag was the way to go. And WWE banked on that, and it paid off. It paid off big time, because I think, looking back at this card now that it's over, this was the best match in the entire show. And not just as a spectacle, as a match. This was the best match of WrestleMania 34. And Ronda Rousey, in her first official match, I think opened a lot of eyes, because nobody knew for sure, what is she going to come out there and be like? Is she going to take to this like a duck to water? Is she going to be a little, you know, a little choppy early on, botching things left and right? Is she going to be a little nervous? She was out there and she fit in just like anybody else would fit in. She took to this quicker, I think, than most people would. In fact, the person that she was teaming with in this match is one of the few people that I can think back to who picked this up as quickly as they did. Kurt Angle seemed to pick this thing up within a matter of months. Brock Lesnar, same thing. He picked this up pretty quick, and Ronda Rousey. I mean, maybe it's something about these Olympians, these amateur wrestlers, but they've got an edge to them, and they're able to pick this up a lot quicker, and she's been a fan for a very long time, and Ronda looked great. Ronda looked fantastic in this match. And, you know, Kurt Angle looked very slow early in the match, but it seemed like as the match went on, he sort of got his second wind, or he was able to kind of kick it into the next gear. And by the time we got into the latter stages of the match, Kurt looked good. Kurt looked real good. He was suplexing Triple H around, doing all of his spots. He didn't look, you know, look gassed or anything like that. He wasn't botching anything. He didn't look like he was about to keel over. You got to remember also, you know, when we saw Kurt come back for the first time in the ring, it was literally on 48 hours notice when he had to take Roman's spot in that match at TLC because Roman came down with bubonic plague or whatever the fuck it was that he had, the measles, the mumps, whatever. So Kurt got called into duty on very short notice. He didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare and to train. And so that probably had a lot, that and Survivor Series too. He also, you know, didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare for that. I'm sure that had a lot to do with him looking as slow and sort of gassed as he did. He definitely looked better here. And Triple H has, you know, chiseled up as he always is in time for WrestleMania every year. Stephanie played her part great. They kept Ronda out of the ring as long as they could. Stephanie kept interfering. She was choking Kurt on the ropes when the referee wasn't looking. And she pulled, she yanked down Ronda off the apron at one point and just doing every possible little heel trick she could think of to get heat and to build ultimately to the hot tag. And when the hot tag came, Ronda came in and she went to work. There is no better person, I think, on the roster who has this. I know there's a phrase for, what's it called? Resting bitch face. That's kind of what it reminds me of. This just a scowl that Ronda has on her face. And she would have it when she used to walk out to the cage for her fights. She just looks like she's going out there to murder 15 people. And I like that. She has a certain intensity about her that none of the other women have. Charlotte, Sasha, Bailey, Becky, Naomi, Absolution, and the Riot Squad. I mean, you go up and down. There is no other woman on that roster that has that same intensity and that same intense look that Ronda does when she comes out to the ring. So she brings that to the table as well, this believability. Now, what was pushing the boundaries of believability in this match, the only negative I could really come up with, is this fact that Stephanie kept countering all of the attempted armbars. She would keep her hands clasped together. Ronda just could not lock this armbar in on Stephanie McMahon, of all people. Is that ridiculous? Yes, it is ridiculous. But I think it's one of those situations where you got to get through an entire match and they have to touch at some point, other than the finish. You're going to have to, suspend your disbelief for something. And so I was not a fan that Stephanie was sort of hanging with the experienced MMA fighter. I thought that was completely ridiculous. But aside from that, that's a minor nitpick here. I loved everything else about this match. I loved all of the false finishes. I loved the part where Ronda got in there and was ready to go toe-to-toe with Triple H. And they had a little couple of spots there. Triple H went for the pedigree, and Ronda countered that into what ended up being an armbar. The funniest part of this whole match is when she initially went face-to-face with Triple H. And she starts throwing these body shots and like these rights and lefts. Just this was not on the level of Shawn Michaels overselling for the big boot for Hulk Hogan back at SummerSlam in 05, where he just bumped to the point of absurdity. You could play the Benny Hill theme song behind it. But Triple H's selling of Ronda's shots when she backed him up into the corner was the funniest thing I saw all night. I literally laughed out loud watching that. And in the end, they had a really nice false finish spot where Ronda had the armbar locked in, or was trying to anyway. And Kurt had the ankle lock locked in on Triple H. And it was this stereo, submission finishes. You think, okay, this is where the match ends. And it didn't. It was actually another false finish. And the match kept going. But in the end, they went with the right finish, which was Ronda tapping out Stephanie, if not breaking her arm in storyline or pulling it out of its socket. She tapped her out to win the match. So Ronda gets a big win in her first match, a very impressive win. Stephanie is the one to take the fall. If Stephanie did suffer an arm injury, which they were teasing, I imagine that takes her certainly out of the ring. It takes her off television for a while, which is even better. Even better if it gets her off TV for a while. Hopefully she got this out of her system. I don't know that Stephanie McMahon is any more of a mainstream star now than she was when this whole thing started 2 months ago, but she got her big match. It was a great match. I give credit to all four people involved and whoever else was involved in putting this thing together, Vince McMahon or whoever, may have been responsible, because this was the, in my opinion, best match on the entire card. And I don't think that you could have asked for a better debut for Ronda Rousey. And for people asking, well, what's next for Ronda? Does she have her next match at SummerSlam? No, she's a full-time performer. I'm not saying she'll wrestle on Raw tonight, but, you know, we have a Backlash pay-per-view coming up. And then after that, I think maybe, Money in the Bank. I mean, there's some other shows between now and SummerSlam. She's a full-time performer. She's got to wrestle a full-time schedule. And that means wrestling on all the key pay-per-view shows. And, you know, I do think you want to pick your spots with her. She shouldn't be on television every single week. But I suspect that we'll get Rousey's first singles match very soon, a lot sooner than SummerSlam. We had the Usos, the New Day, the Bludgeon Brothers, triple threat for the tag team titles. This I felt bad for these guys in a way, just coming off that match before. There was no way you could follow that match. And people, I could tell you, in the Superdome really did not care. Now, it was cool to see the Usos come out and formally get their first WrestleMania entrance for the first time in 10 years. That was cool. I was happy for those guys. Once the bell rang and the match started, hardly anybody cared. The Bludgeon Brothers did get the win. They had an assisted powerbomb spot off the top rope. I think they powerbombed Kofi, splatted him on the ground, got the pin, as they should have. It's time to get some new blood at the top of the tag team division. It's time to get some new blood in the tag team division, which is why I think coming out of WrestleMania, we're going to see, you know, a group like the Authors of Pain on television, if not this week, probably very soon, because we need new teams, we need some new female faces, we need some new blood coming out of WrestleMania. And that's what we should have. You know, after WrestleMania every year, we ought to see some new faces. As a match, though, I don't really have an opinion one way or the other. It was, you know, an average match. It really wasn't anything overly special. It wasn't a bad match. It wasn't a long match. It was a means to an end. And it was a means to get those tag team belts off the Usos and to heat up the Bludgeon Brothers. And that's exactly what they did. I think it was the right outcome. And up next was John Cena. The man with no match. John Cena came out, decked out in his neon green shirt and his neon green hat and his neon green armbands, looking like the Jolly Green Giant. Came down to the ring, and another referee came down to inform him, I presume, that The Undertaker was not there. And Cena looked very upset, even put his hands on the referee and grabbed him by the shirt. Couldn't believe what he was hearing. Out came Elias. We knew Elias was coming out because he wasn't in the Battle Royal. So either he was coming out for something with Cena, he was going to be Strowman's mystery partner, maybe he was going to have a segment with The Rock and have dueling concerts, but we knew Elias would be on the show in some way. Of all the things for them to do with Elias, I thought this was probably the worst thing that they could have done. And when I say worst, and look, he got to work with John Cena at WrestleMania. He was in a pretty high-profile spot. I just mean in terms of doing something creative with him. I didn't see this as being anything overly creative. You could say it was clever because it got more heat on him because people wanted The Undertaker. They didn't want him. But he came out. He sang on his way to the ring. He got in. And basically, I mean, really, for all intents and purposes, he and John Cena had a match. And the bell never rang. There was no three count. It was not an official match, but John Cena basically wrestled two matches on this show. He hit all of his trademark spots on Elias quickly, the shoulder tackles, the five-knuckle shuffle. He hit him with an F an AA, I should say, and that was it. And Elias rolled out of there, and I just thought to myself, you know, of all the clever things they could have done with him performing, even if they couldn't get The Rock, you know, I just felt like, I don't know. I'm sure it was a thrill for him, but I was kind of disappointed that they blew him off as quickly as they did. So now he's out of the picture. John Cena says, well, I guess that's it. I guess I'm done here. My work here is done. He starts walking to the back when all of a sudden the lights go out. The lights come back on. We see The Undertaker's gear from last year that he had left in the middle of the ring. The coat, hat, gloves. They're sitting right where they were in the middle of the ring the year before. And then a lightning bolt hits. And the lights go out again. And the Undertaker's music begins to play. And not Kid Rock. We did not get American Badass Undertaker, which I knew we weren't getting American Badass Undertaker the minute I saw Triple H and Stephanie come out on motorcycles for their entrance. That was the first comment I made to my buddy sitting next to me. I said, well, I guess we're not getting the American Badass tonight because they're not going to have Triple H and Stephanie come out on motorcycles for their entrance. And then 2 segments later have the Undertaker come out on a motorcycle too. So that kind of spoiled that for me. And I was disappointed for a couple of different reasons. Selfishly, I think it would have been cool one last time to see him as a more humanized version of himself. I've said the American Badass stuff warmed on me over the years. I was not a fan of it back in the day. I thought it was blasphemy for them to do away with the dead man gimmick. And I was very happy when it came back in 04. That being said, A, I just for old time's sake wanted to see it. But B, I really wish they would have left well enough alone last year. And I really don't feel any differently now. Undertaker came out dressed as the dead man. He had a very quick 3-minute match, not even 3-minute match. Basically a squash. He had a squash match. He squashed John Cena at WrestleMania. He buried John Cena at WrestleMania. Literally, he's an Undertaker. That's what he does. So he beats John Cena, hits all of his trademark spots, old school, right off the top rope, and he hit the big boot, which never connected. That looked bad, but hit a leg drop. He hit Cena with a massive choke slam. Cena got some height on this choke slam. And finally, Cena gets one offensive move in on the Undertaker, hits a back suplex, lays him out. Cena goes to do the five-knuckle shuffle. I believe it was the five-knuckle shuffle he was going for. As soon as he goes to hit the ropes, Undertaker does the zombie sit-up. Turns to Cena. That was kind of cool. Hit the choke slam and then hits a tombstone pile driver. One tombstone. And he pins John Cena. Well, I was happy it only took one tombstone. That's good. It's been a while since we've had somebody get beaten by one. And the fans loved it. People lapped it up. They thought it was great. I thought it was great in that it went less than 3 minutes because we don't need to be seeing 10, 15-minute long Undertaker matches anymore. And I see all these comments online. Oh, he looked great. He's turned back the hands of time. This guy could, all these people that cast him off, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. He wrestled a 2-minute match. There are people in my section saying, the Undertaker is back. He looked great. I said, yeah, he was in there for 2 minutes. If I got in there for 2 minutes, I can make myself look great. He was in there for 2 minutes. He was an entrance and a 2-minute match. I would certainly hope that in those 2 minutes, he can muster up enough strength to look good and to hit a couple of big moves and pin the guy and be done. It was a short work night for The Undertaker. But I think, you know, people are playing this up a little bit too much here. Yeah, he looked awful last year, and he looked a lot better this year. I'll give you that. Absolutely. He definitely looked better than last year. I will say that. But he also wrestled a 2-minute match. I'm not going to let this go. Like, you know, people are making this out to be like, he's reduced 10 years from his age. And it's like, that's not how this works. And this does not make me any more excited to see him wrestling more matches in the future. I thought what they did here was fine. It was a feel-good moment. And Undertaker got to avenge the streak in the same building. He had a big loss 4 years ago. Here he got a big win. I know there were some people also very upset. They felt shortchanged by how short the match was. But there's nothing to feel shortchanged by. There was no match going into the show. This was not part of the card. They were very smart, I thought, in the way they handled it in that respect. Because, you know, people can be upset about it all they want to, but they didn't promise you anything. There was no match officially announced beforehand. So it did not bother me at all. If anything, I was very happy to see the match be as short as it was. I think that was the right way to go with it. Is this the end of The Undertaker? I'm not answering these questions anymore because it's pointless. It's pointless. I told you, The Undertaker will be wrestling the Velveteen Dream at WrestleMania 40. This guy's not done. He's not going anywhere. The Undertaker will wrestle again next year. Some people are speculating that we'll have Undertaker Cena next year in more of a formal match. Maybe they'll do a double retirement match, which is what I had suggested they do this year. But maybe they're saving that for next year. It's like Rock beating Cena the first time. They came back and Rock put Cena over. Maybe they're doing the same thing here with Undertaker. Maybe we'll find out on TV tonight. Maybe by the time you hear this, we already have our answer. It's very possible. I could really do without seeing it though, because, you know, I don't know. I just feel like, you know, the Undertaker's time has come and gone, and you know, if they have short segments like this for him, I think that's fine. But I just don't trust that he could go out there, and have the kind of long match that he came to be known for having at WrestleMania. I think those days are over. I think this was fine. And I wish that they didn't sort of overturn the finish from last year, which I thought was very well done. But for the 2 minutes he was in there, he looked good. And he got a nice win for himself, a nice little way to avenge the streak ending in the same building. And I think for the most part, it sent people away happy. We have the return of Daniel Bryan teaming up with Shane McMahon against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. This was the match with the stipulation that if Owens and Zayn lost, they would remain fired. But if they won, they would get their jobs back with SmackDown Live. I thought for sure Bryan was losing. I thought Owens and Zayn were going to get their jobs back. And maybe whether it be Shane turning on Bryan or another miscommunication between the two of them, they were being so lovey-dovey and buddy-buddy on TV last week, it just set off alarm bells in my head. But they went the predictable way. Where Bryan got powerbombed on the ring apron outside the ring. He was laid out early on. Shane was on his own. It was basically a two-on-one handicap match for more than half the match. I thought that the match was kind of boring, honestly, up until Bryan finally tagged in. It just felt like coming off the Undertaker-Cena stuff, people were not as into things when Shane was in the ring and Bryan was just sort of laying outside. Once he got the hot tag and came in, things obviously picked up. And it was very cool to see Bryan when he first came out and everybody, 70-some-odd thousand people, you know, chanting yes. And it was like, for a moment there, we were transported back to 2014 when this whole yes thing first became popular. I guess that would have been 2012 when it first became popular. But in 2014, I was there. I was in the Superdome that year when he came out. And the whole building, just throwing their fingers and hands up in the air, chanting yes, yes, yes. To see people doing that again here in his first match back was really cool. And he was very over. I mean, he was one of the, if not the, honestly, most popular person on the entire show. Right up there with Rusev Day, in fact. And in the end, Bryan was able to lock in the yes lock, and Sami Zayn was the one who tapped out. So Daniel Bryan gets a big win in his first match back. A nice feel-good moment there. If you're a Daniel Bryan fan, seeing him get the win, he hugged Shane. He went to ringside. He hugged and kissed his wife, Brie Bella. This was, you know, just a feel-good moment, and Bryan is back, hopefully not concussed. Again, the stipulation was that every time he would wrestle initially, he has to go to the back and immediately get checked out. I've not read or heard anything online that he was diagnosed with a concussion or anything like that. I think he had like a cut or a bruise or something, I think, on his leg. But aside from that, he seems to have gotten out of the match unscathed, and he's got a win under his belt. They did announce the crowd. 78,133, I believe, is the number that they announced. They put a whole announcement out. I said earlier, you know, talking about how the show was sold out, which it was not. We had Alexa Bliss defending her Raw Women's Championship against Nia Jax. Nobody cared about this match most of the way. This was just, and this went a lot longer than people thought. I was about ready to start my old Diva stopwatch here, figuring this thing wasn't going longer than 30 seconds. And in fact, it went over 8 minutes. And Alexa got a lot of offense in on Nia, including a big, I think it was the twisting Bliss from the top rope onto Nia out to the floor. She kept going after the eye. She would rake Nia's eyes to try to escape the Samoan drop attempts. But finally, Jax had had enough. She hit the old hardcore Holly Alabama slam and then finally hit the Samoan drop, but did so off the middle rope. Squashed poor Alexa, hit her with the Samoan drop, and won her first championship in WWE. People were very positive about the finish in the building. They felt happy for Nia. They applauded her. I thought for most of the way, though, this was a very dull match and people didn't really seem to care. Other than the couple of times when Nia would hit like a really big spot. But she went outside. She celebrated with the Rock's mom and the Rock's daughter who were there. We knew that they were there because as soon as we landed in New Orleans at the airport the other day, we were by the baggage carousel and there they were. There was the Rock's mom and his daughter. And immediately, you know, everyone says, oh, that means The Rock is going to be there. And I just laugh. I'm like, The Rock, he may be there. Maybe he'll be there. But that doesn't mean anything, because there are a lot of different shows that The Rock is not on. The Rock's mother has been to a lot of shows that The Rock has not been at. And I figured they were there probably to support Nia Jax. In fact, I think when Nia had that horrible car accident a few years ago, as did The Rock's mom, I think that they were in the car together. I think when The Rock's mom got hurt in that car wreck, Nia was the other person in the car. So, I mean, that's a tight-knit group there. That's a tight-knit family. They came out to support her. The Rock obviously was not there. He said he was not going to be there, but not everybody believed him. Then again, James Ellsworth, when I talked to him yesterday, was telling me that, no, I'm going home. I don't have any big plans or anything. And I didn't believe him either. But he turned out to be right. He wasn't on the show last night. And as far as Nia winning the championship goes, it was the right move to make. Nia has not won a championship, so she is a first-time champion. And the story they were telling, I said this on the podcast that I did, the last one. It reminded me in some ways of the build to Triple H and Booker T at WrestleMania 19, where in this case it was more fat-shaming. Back then it was these racist overtones, you know, Triple H constantly putting Booker down, his nappy hair, all this other stuff. People like you, you're a clown, and people like you don't win championships. And you just hope and figure, well, in the end, you know, Booker will get his comeuppance and he'll prove him wrong and he'll win the world title, and that never did happen. In this case, though, Nia got her revenge. The bully Alexa Bliss was put down. It was a good story for them to tell, and it was time to get that belt off Alexa. I think she had it long enough. We then got into the championship matches here. AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura for the WWE Championship. Nakamura had the great entrance that I mentioned earlier. It's like a rock concert coupled with, you know, these scores of violin players that were lining the stage. Actually, I think the guitarist was someone from Alice Cooper's band who may have been in attendance at the NXT TakeOver show the night before. That lady's name, I forgot. It might have been her. So, great entrance for Nakamura. AJ had what would be considered a standard entrance, but he also had pyro. We haven't seen pyro in a long time. There was pyro up and down on the card here at WrestleMania. So, if you are a pyromaniac, you were in heaven watching this show. So, this was the big dream match. This is a match that I've been looking forward to for a very long time. A lot of people were amped up. They were ready for the first meeting between these two since their Wrestle Kingdom match in New Japan a couple of years ago, and did not know if they were going to be able to pull off a match like that. You also had the wild card of AJ's knee injury. He had an injury going into the show, and we still don't know how much of a role that injury may have played in this match. I'm not going to use that as an excuse or anything like that, because I did not think this match lived up to expectations. I thought the match was good. I thought that the match in many ways was disappointing. I expected more. I wonder if it was designed that way, because we see now coming out of the match, this was the first step of what will end up being a long feud, most likely, between these two. At least a couple more matches. In the end, Nakamura went for the Kinshasa. AJ ducked it, countered it, turned it into a Styles clash, and got the pin. And much like Undertaker hitting the one tombstone on John Cena and getting the pin, it's been a while since we've seen Undertaker hit only one tombstone and get the win. It's been a while since we've seen AJ Styles hit the Styles Clash and get the win also. So that, I actually thought that was kind of cool, that it took the one Styles Clash to put him away. Now, this was after he had already hit the phenomenal forearm earlier in the match and only got a near fall out of it. So Nakamura did kick out of that, but he did not kick out of the Styles Clash. Everybody in my section certainly was stunned. I was also shocked. Not disappointed. I will never be disappointed to see AJ Styles retain his championship. But I did not think that they were going to go with that as the finish. I just did not see that coming. And Nakamura, you know, he embraces AJ after the match. They hug. And it kind of reminded me of the moment with Shawn and Chris Jericho, WrestleMania 19, only in this case, instead of kicking AJ in the crotch, Nakamura was down on bended knee, proposing to him with a championship belt, it looked like. He handed him the belt, and when AJ let his guard down, Nakamura gave him a low blow. And so Shinsuke Nakamura, the sore loser that he is now a heel. This was, I assume, the beginning of a heel turn for Shinsuke Nakamura. And I can't help but look back on this and actually think they may have turned the wrong Japanese star. I remember heel Asuka when we got her for a while in NXT, and she was a lot of fun to watch. And I almost feel like it might have been better if they would have had Asuka be the one to do that, where she embraces Charlotte, and then she, well, I guess maybe a low blow wouldn't do anything to her, but, you know, to attack her in some way and turn on her and do it with her instead of Nakamura. Especially because with Asuka, you can actually understand if she had this long streak going, now the streak has been ended, she's probably very emotional. She's probably on the verge of psychosis. She's very upset. You could believe that she would lose her cool and she would attack Charlotte and do something like that to her. But they went with Shinsuke instead, and I'm okay with that. I actually am okay with that because it builds to what I assume will be a longer, better match. It got a mixed reaction at the finish. I think people didn't quite know what to make of it. Again, people just didn't really expect this. They didn't really see it coming. But Nakamura was going, full-on heel on AJ when this thing was over. He was kicking him in the face and kicked him right out of the ring. And on the outside, he finally nailed the Kinshasa and left him laying. So, sore loser Shinsuke is apparently going to be the new character change for him going forward. And it is kind of odd that they put together that network special that people raved about that gave you some real insight finally into the man himself, what makes him tick, his interests, and what motivates him. And everybody I heard from said, this is a great special. They should have aired this on television to build up to the match at WrestleMania. It would have made him so much more likable and relatable. And now they go and turn him heel. But you know what? I'm okay with that because we'll get more matches between them. And I hope and expect that those matches will be longer and better than this one was. This match, for me, did not live up to expectations. This was a good match. It should have been a great match. For a match they build as a dream match, I did not think it lived up to expectations. And I don't know if that's attributable to, you know, an injury that AJ has, or if it's just attributable to the fact that they were building to more matches and didn't want to give it all away. You know, they didn't want to give away the store in the very first match. But, you know, it also just falls on both guys. They built up these expectations so much that I think people expected a lot more than what they got. And I still have yet to see that truly classic great performance in WWE from Shinsuke Nakamura. We have not seen it. Unless you count the match with Sami Zayn at that first TakeOver show where he debuted. I'm talking main roster here, though. I have yet to see a match with Shinsuke that I can honestly look at and say, man, that... So that's what I've been hearing about this guy. You know, like if you didn't know anything about this guy, you know, you would probably look at him today and just think, well, you know, he's a good wrestler, but I don't really see what all the hype is. You know, because those knockdown, drag out great matches he had in New Japan, which I know that's a stiffer style, it's a different style, but we've gotten none of that so far in WWE. And in that respect, I thought this fell short of what it should have been, but still a good match. Sheamus and Cesaro against Braun Strowman and a mystery partner. Who would this mystery partner turn out to be? Is it going to be James Ellsworth? Is it going to be Elias? Is it going to be Samoa Joe? Nobody knew. But it was an intriguing little mystery that they saved for the pay-per-view. Strowman comes out, he grabs a microphone, and he says, "My partner is you. And you," he pointed at me. And I briefly thought about being his tag team partner, but I said, you know what? Probably not a good idea. I'm not ready. I haven't loosened up. I haven't had time to stretch. So I decided to not volunteer for that job. Maybe I should have, because what he ended up doing is going into the crowd and picking a child. He picked a child, and I thought it was a girl at first. Apparently it was a boy, named Nicholas. And Nicholas, for those who don't know, is apparently the son of the WWE referee who was refereeing this match here, referee John Cone. That was his son. So he pulled Nicholas into the ring. He put him on the apron. He said, "You just stand there. You don't have to do anything." Now, he did tag in Nicholas at one point. And Nicholas came in. He didn't do anything. Obviously, he didn't get physical. He immediately tagged right back out. This was all just a backdrop for Braun to basically win the tag team titles all by himself. So I'm not really sure what the point of this whole mystery partner gimmick was. I thought him picking a kid as his partner was incredibly stupid. It made for a fun moment, I guess, in the building. People went nuts for the kid. Nicholas was more over than Roman Reigns was. I don't know what that says about Vince McMahon's little experiment with Reigns over the last 3 or 4 years, when a small child appears to be more popular than him. But people went crazy for Nicholas, and they were chanting his name. I think there were other chants also of, you deserve it, and fight forever, just sort of being sarcastic. But, where they go from here, I don't know. You know, many of you will have already seen Raw by the time you listen to this, but are they going to have Kurt Angle just say, look, this was not official, the belts go back to the bar? Is he going to strip them and vacate the titles, and we're going to have yet another tournament? We've had so many of those lately in WWE. They're going to have to do something. I don't suspect that Nicholas will be on the road going forward. He may be back on TV tonight since his dad is working there. I'm sure he's still there. But the idea that they would build up a mystery partner angle for this guy, and make you think, look, Kurt Angle flat out said, you need a partner. You have to find a partner. You may not want one, but you need one. And so people's imaginations begin to start running wild. And for the payoff to be a small child, I do think it's fair play to bash them and make fun of them for this. If you did the same thing with Judy Bagwell or David Arquette in WCW, this was equally stupid, if not more so, frankly. Actually, I won't say more so, because David Arquette winning their world title is still, the dumbest thing. But it was a fun moment for those of us in the building, but the angle itself was just incredibly stupid. Does it kill the Raw titles? Does it bury the bar? No, they'll be fine. But for the payoff to be a kid, I think is just stupid. Speaking of stupid, that brings us to the main event. Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship. A match as predictable as the sun shining in the morning and the grass being green outside on your lawn. But this was Vince McMahon's experiment. He has been waiting patiently to anoint Roman Reigns as the chosen one. It seemed to be a foregone conclusion going into the show that we would, in fact, have a new Universal Champion. It was just a matter of how. It was a matter of, is Paul Heyman going to turn on Lesnar? And I've said before, I don't want Paul Heyman to ever turn on Brock Lesnar. I said this in a mailbag question once. He should never, ever turn on Brock Lesnar. I don't care if Brock leaves and goes back to UFC. That's fine. Brock can leave. Doesn't mean that Heyman has to split from him. Doesn't prevent Heyman from being used to represent other people. That's a pairing that they broke up once prematurely, and it was a mistake then. It would be a mistake now. Because Brock, even if he leaves, he's coming back. It may be a year from now, 2 years from now, but he will be back. And if he comes back, he needs Heyman with him. And they, I'd rather not have them in a position where they have to explain away yet again how they're back together. So the two of them should never split. But the question wasn't so much who's winning, it's how. That was really the question coming out of this match. So they decided to throw us a little bit of a curveball. They decided to go ahead and everybody thinks they know what's going to happen. I'll show them. And they swerved everybody. And they had Brock Lesnar go in there after a year as Universal Champion and beat Roman Reigns, pinned him clean in the middle of the ring with one F. Well, let me preface this by saying he hit multiple F5s throughout this match, but he hit one final F5 to retain the championship. Now, let's back up a second here. The match itself. Roman Reigns booed, as you would expect. Brock Lesnar, too, booed by a good portion of, not the whole crowd, but a good portion of the crowd. And right from the get-go, people did not care. They chanted boring. They chanted, this is awful. Beach ball mania returned. There were beach balls bouncing around all over the place. So anytime during the match where you heard random booing or cheering, it was from the beach balls, either being confiscated or a new one popping up. Some people tried to start a wave. It didn't work because you got 75,000 people, so you're not going to start a wave. people didn't care. And this was your WrestleMania main event. It was embarrassing. It really was, to be sitting there and to see all of this happening and to see Roman Reigns kick out of that first F5 and kick out of the second F5 and kick out of the third F5. And the fourth, and the fifth. Finally, I think it was the sixth one that finished him off. But to see him kick out of this move after a year where they had Brock Lesnar beat people like Samoa Joe and Braun Strowman, and even Roman Reigns at SummerSlam, but Strowman and Joe in particular, AJ Styles at Survivor Series, They went out of their way to make sure that he only hit that move once. It was the one move that nobody could kick out of. And you knew why they were doing that. You knew they were waiting until WrestleMania so that Roman would get the big reaction when he finally does what nobody else could do and he kicks out of the F5. And not only did the people not care the first time he kicked out four or five more times and it got no reaction at all. And, you know, it was really sad to watch, you know, because they spent so much time, I don't say tearing down other people. That's not entirely accurate, but you know, they spent so much time, trying to just convince people that this was going to be some kind of a big moment. And to hear the people just be completely indifferent to it, to see beach balls bouncing around all over the place and people, you know, just chanting random things and chanting Rusev Day is a colossal failure. It's just a failure on the part of Vince McMahon for what he's been trying to do for the last year. Everything built to this moment, and it was a total abject failure. They had Roman busted open. He got busted open hard way by those forearms and elbows from Lesnar. He was bloodied up pretty good. And it's not something we see very often where a guy's entire face is just covered in blood. I don't know if they were going for the Austin moment from WrestleMania 13. Obviously they were trying to get sympathy on Roman. If that's what they were trying to do, again, it failed. It did not work. Roman hit a whole bunch of spears. Lesnar then hit one final F5 and got the pin. Everybody was stunned. I think you got this great reaction at the end because people were just happy, A, that the match was over, and B, that Roman didn't win. But this was almost as shocking as the streak ending in 2014. Not quite, but this was also, you know, one of those things where I don't know if they called an audible the day of. I don't know if they just worked everybody. My guess is they probably just worked everybody into thinking that Brock was leaving and this was his last match. I've never been more happy to be wrong. I thought that this was actually a really clever finish on their part. I thought that it sets things up for Raw tonight in a very interesting way because we don't know what's going to happen. We especially don't know what's going to happen now because there's been a story reported, and I wasn't even going to talk about it, but I see Ryan Satin now is reporting or confirming with different sources of his that there was a real-life confrontation backstage after the show last night between Brock Lesnar and Vince McMahon. Brock was pissed about something. He came through the curtain. He had words with Vince. He may have thrown his belt either at him or at a wall, and he walked off. There's some talk that Brock may have gone off script a little bit near the end of the match, and Vince apparently was livid. Vince McMahon supposedly was absolutely livid during the match, and he wasn't happy, and Brock wasn't happy. If I had a guess, if this is all legit on the up and up, I could see Brock being upset about the crowd reaction, people not caring, people, you know, bouncing beach balls around. He probably wasn't very happy about that. But I, other than that, I don't know what that could be about. I don't know what that's about. Or maybe this is all just part of the work, right? We'll find out tonight. But I thought that adds an interesting little wrinkle to things here because I don't see how either one of those guys honestly could be happy with the crowd reaction to the match. I wouldn't put it on the same level necessarily as WrestleMania 20. I think that was more of a disaster. You're also in a 20,000 seat building. So, you know, when people crap on the match, it's a lot less, you know, it's more spread out when you're in a big dome or a stadium like this, instead of having, you know, the entire building, you know, in unison chanting something. But, you know, having been in the building last night, I could just tell you that people were doing everything they could to crap all over the match. I thought it was really sad. And I could totally understand both guys being disappointed, but this is on WWE. You know, they had to know that putting that match on in the final spot that something like this would happen. And if they didn't, then they're morons. Because a blind man could have seen what was going to happen here. And exactly what everybody thought would happen is what happened. They turned on the match. WWE decided to swerve everybody. And now we see where Brock goes from here. Is he really on the outs with WWE? Is he really pissed at Vince McMahon? Is it all just, you know, part of the story? Is he going to show up tonight and have Roman challenge him again? And maybe Roman will beat him for the championship tonight on TV? Is Bobby Lashley going to debut maybe and challenge Brock Lesnar for the championship? Is Samoa Joe going to come out and challenge Lesnar for the championship? Because Joe is ready to rock. Joe's ready to come back. He was rumored to be first in line for a title shot coming out of WrestleMania. I think what would be great would be to have Samoa Joe come out on TV tonight and have him lay down some kind of a challenge to Brock, and even if it takes the entire show, but he has to convince Brock to do something he's never done before since he came back in 2012, which is wrestle a match on free television. And Lesnar gets all cocky. He accepts the challenge. They have an impromptu match. And he beats Lesnar tonight on TV to become the new Universal Champion. That would make a statement. That would bring back Joe in a very forceful, dominant way, put him in pole position to be the top guy in the brand, feud with Roman or whoever. That, to me, is what I would like to see happen. But this is all predicated on whether or not Brock is coming back. We still don't know. You know, maybe they got Dana White in on the whole thing. And Dana White was there last night, by the way. They showed him on screen. He was there to root on Ronda Rousey. But, you know, he's been in the news lately saying, oh, yeah, you know, Brock is coming back. It's just a matter of when. But he is absolutely coming back to UFC. I think he is, too. It may not be until later in the year. You know, maybe Brock is not done. Maybe Brock has a few more pay-per-view matches. If that's the case, I suppose you don't have to take the championship off him so quickly. But I said going into this show, you know, as much as I wasn't thrilled with this being the WrestleMania main event, I'm kind of over Brock Lesnar as the Universal Champion because he isn't around long enough, I think, to keep things interesting enough. And I like the idea of him being around, and I still think he has a special aura about him that a lot of other people don't have. But I'm done with him. I'm over this whole Brock Lesnar as Universal Champion thing. So if the idea is to keep the belt on him for another few months or until SummerSlam or something, I think that would be god-awful. And if I'm them, I get that belt off him tonight. I think, you know, you want to, before he goes away, you want to, you know, have a big attraction on television. Well, Brock never wrestles on TV, so why not have him have an impromptu match, do the title change, get people talking, make people happy, and, you know, the post-WrestleMania Raw is a way to start your new season. It's like the start of a new season now, right? We're starting from scratch. And I can't think of a better way to do that than by putting the belt on Joe, right? First night after Mania. I think that would be a very cool thing for them to do. As a match, I didn't think that the Lesnar-Reigns match last night was as good as the match they had at 31. I liked that match better. I thought that was a better match, obviously with a more cooperative crowd. We had blood in that match as well. The cash-in also sort of cemented that match, I think, as one of the more memorable ones in WrestleMania history. So definitely a better match at 31. I didn't think this match was really good at all. And the crowd had a lot to do with that. They just were not cooperating. They were not into it. And when you hit big moves like that to total silence or indifference, it hurts the match. So yeah, it was hard-hitting, and there was blood, and there were some big spots, and there was an F5 on the table and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't think it was a very good match. And I didn't think, you know, we've had this string here of WrestleMania main events going back to 32 in Dallas that just have not been good. And they're going to have to do something about that, because I don't know about you, but I'm kind of tired of WrestleMania going off the air with matches that don't live up to expectations here. But that finish, they swerved the hell out of me. And I'm happy they did. I think it actually sent the crowd home somewhat happy. And it sets up what should be a title win, if it were me, for Joe on TV tonight. So that's your WrestleMania review. That was WrestleMania 34 last night. Again, overall, I think the best WrestleMania since 31. I thought overall it was there's more of a thumbs up on, you know, on the show than thumbs down. But some of these finishes were just, I don't know what they were thinking on some of these matches. The NXT TakeOver show Saturday night. I mean, I just want to say really quickly, people ask me, do you think that was the best TakeOver of all of them? And I never have a straight answer anymore because they all sort of run together for me. You know, it's hard for me to pinpoint which TakeOver show overall may have been better. I can't tell you. It was certainly one of the better TakeOver shows I've ever seen. It was a great night of wrestling. Adam Cole winning the North American Championship, the whole turn they did with Roddy. I wanted them to do that turn months ago. If not last year, and so they waited a while to do it. But him turning on Pete Dunne during the Tag Team Championship match and helping the Undisputed Era win, and now we have a little ROH crew going on in Ring of Honor. We have Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly, and Roderick Strong. And I think Roddy as a heel is going to be a lot better off. He was very bland as a babyface. I think this is going to be, it's going to do him good. I think it's a good move for NXT. It was a nice swerve that, again, nobody saw coming. And so I like that. and the women's championship match, Shayna Baszler winning the title from Ember Moon. No big surprise there. I didn't think they could beat Shayna two times in a row. I did think it was kind of ridiculous as long as Ember held on to before she finally tapped out. But, you know, they wanted to keep her strong in defeat, and I think she may be main roster bound. So as a match, I think it was fine. And Shayna, you know, Shayna's going to continue to get better. As capable as Ronda is and as impressive as she was at Mania last night, you got to give your just desserts to Shayna as well, because she's also very good, and I think a year from now she'll be even better. Aleister Black and Andrade Cien Almas went on second to last. I didn't expect that. And he is the new NXT champion. It was very weird seeing him smile. We don't see Aleister Black. I don't think we should, frankly, see him smiling like that. Hopefully that was a one-time-only thing. But, you know, Zelina Vega trying to interfere, and she got caught. Actually, Andrade caught her, and as he's holding her, he got kicked right in the face, black mass, and pinned, which was the right finish. And I think he had a nice run. He really did. He won me over, Andrade did, and I see big things for him. If they bring him and her up together as a package deal to Raw or SmackDown, you know, for all the talk about how much Vince McMahon loves Alberto El Patron, who flaked out, by the way, on Impact again, just a total embarrassment this guy is. He no-showed, you know, the Impact versus Lucha Underground show at WrestleCon, and then I think he was also supposed to be back at WrestleCon the next day. He no-showed that as well. I don't know what the excuse was that he gave, if he claimed he was sick, or what the case may be. I'll tell you this. I was at WrestleCon on Friday, and he was there, and he looked perfectly fine to me. So, obviously, they weren't buying whatever bullshit he may have been peddling, because Impact terminated him. They should have terminated him a long time ago. This is a long time coming. But already there's talk that he may be WWE bound, and he may be on TV tonight. Who knows? Vince McMahon likes the guy. He I don't know why. Maybe he sees him as a man's man or something. I don't know. You want a Latin star, though, forget Del Rio. Forget Del Rio. You go with this guy. You go with Andrade. And I think he could go even further, frankly, than Alberto could. He's got a lot of potential in that respect. As far as the main event, unsanctioned match, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, what can I say? This was everything that I expected it to be. This was a knockdown, brawl, you know, the very definition of a grudge match. These two beat the hell out of each other. The crutch came into play, multiple crutches, in fact, came into play during this match, playing off of Ciampa's injury. I thought that they were going for the spot at the end where they were going to sit down, legs crossed next to each other in the ring, you know, and then, you know, Tommaso would go to hit him or something. And it seemed like Johnny was going to sit down, and then Tommaso went to hit him in the head with a crutch, or I'm sorry, the brace from his leg. But just every little thing about that match, it's too much to go over here, but every little thing about that match, all the little tricks they put in there and the little callbacks and everything. It's just, it was so well done. They've been telling this story for so long. And the mat, and then you, not only do you have this great story, but you go out there and you deliver. You give people a great match that does this story justice. And I didn't think Johnny was going to win. I thought that Tommaso was going to win and everybody would be thinking that Johnny would win because he gets his job back, but instead he loses and then he goes to the main roster. And instead, they gave us the feel-good moment. Excuse me. They gave us the feel-good moment. And he got Tommaso in the Gargano escape. But he used the leg brace. He actually wrapped the leg brace around Tommaso's face and wrenched back until he tapped out, which was kind of a unique finish. And the place went nuts. And Candice came down and she celebrated with her husband. And again, it was just this great feel-good moment. And a nice way to cap off what is one of the greatest NXT TakeOver shows of all time. So not really surprising, considering that we have yet to get a bad TakeOver show. They only seem to get better. And NXT now is also in prime position going forward. I mean, they have a lot of talent on that show. You know, you've got Gargano and Ciampa for now are still there, until Gargano at least gets called up. So you've got them. You've got Aleister Black as the new champion. Andrade, I assume, is being called up soon enough, but for now, he's still there as well. You've got all this other indie talent, like Ricochet debuted. He looked amazing on the show. EC3 looked good as well in that ladder match. So you've got them now. You've got the Undisputed Era guys, including Roddy now as a heel. Pete Dunne, I don't know if this is a babyface turn for Pete Dunne, if he's going to feud with them now. You know, for a while, I'd be okay with that. I think long-term though, he's a great heel. He's better in that role. But hey, if we get a Pete Dunne feud now with the Undisputed Era, we get him on TV more often. more power to him. I would love to see more Pete Dunne on TV. So NXT is in a really good spot right now. They have a lot of talent, a wealth of talent, and they are primed, I think, to have a really good year. So there you go. You could probably hear my voice is totally shot. It's been an exhausting weekend. But you know what? For me, it's been good to get my mind off things with everything that's been going on. I have to just thank everybody for that. Everybody, all the kind comments and messages about my mom and everything else. And we have another day here before I fly home. But it's been nice to get away from all of that, to get away from life for a little bit and take my mind off things and, you know, be around friends and fans and enjoy some quality wrestling shows. And we still have Raw tomorrow night. I will not be here for SmackDown. I am flying out Tuesday morning, but I am looking forward to seeing where they go with this whole Universal title situation on Raw tonight. So, again, vote in the poll. The poll for WrestleMania is still up on my Twitter, at Solomonster. We had over 6,500 votes already, which is insane. Right now, more people than not seem to enjoy the show last night, but you could chime in with your own comments and give it a thumbs up, thumbs down. And I will be back with a brand new podcast next weekend. That'll be episode 5. Well, we'll see. If I push this out to the feed, that would be 542. It'll be 542 or 543. I don't know. We'll see. It'll be one of those numbers. But leave your thoughts as well. What did you think of WrestleMania? Leave a comment down below. Give this video a thumbs up. I am out of here. So until next time, be well, stay safe, and thank you for all of your support. I will see you back here again for more Sound Off real soon. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster, but it is I who will climb out alone. And with a smile across my face.
Oh, oh my God.
What do they think this is, Shakespeare? I was driving yesterday, and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane. I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish 1,000 deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope and we could fade to commercial.
Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.